Welcome back to the Lenses Podcast. It's show 129, and we bring Chris Sebring and Heather Palaszczuk together to talk about all things from New Jersey Pinhole Club to group sex with aliens. Enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to the Lenses Podcast. It's show number 129, and just me again. I was tempted to throw Corey under the bus for not being here, but bless him, we miss him. And Corey, we look forward to your return, whenever that might be. So show 128 was Nick Voracek, and thanks, Nick, for coming on and being a great guest as ever. But this show, it's been a while. It's been nearly 6 weeks, I think. We have two for the price of one. In supermarket terms, it used to be called a bog-off. Buy one, get one free. So we welcome, and both have been on before, so we welcome back Heather Palaszczuk and Chris Sebring. How are you doing, guys?
Hey, Andrew. Good. Doing good.
Yes, doing good.
Excellent. Well, it's lovely to have you back. We were chatting a little bit before we started the recording, about trying to, you know, keep topics and keep it focused, so that'll never happen. But both have been on before, and if you're not familiar with Heather and Chris, we'll just get them to do a little intro biography. I'll tell you what I'll do, Heather. I'll start with you.
Okay.
And I'll just read out what you put on your website and see if you want to deny it or confirm it.
Just be careful what I write on there.
Yeah. So your concepts revolve around relationships, usually the relationships between humans and Mother Nature. Currently, I'm exploring ways in which I can create artwork with Mother Nature and not just about her. My favorite mediums and processes are light and chemistry-based, pinhole photography, cyanotypes, alternative processes, mixed media, cameraless photography. I approach my work with the same philosophy I try to approach life with: slow, meaningful, environmentally friendly, and resisting convenience. I'm not sure I fit into any of those, but anyway, would you like to deny or confirm
that statement? I confirm. Yeah, no, that's me. Nothing has changed since I wrote that.
Okay. That's excellent. Well, we'll dive into some of those areas as we go on. What about you, Chris? Should I embarrass you about what you've written on your website?
I don't know what I've written on my website.
You said you're a Pennsylvania-based artist and maker, specializing in lensless photography and general oddities. Well, that begs lots of questions. I grew up in a sleepy riverside town in historic Bucks County, Pennsylvania, USA, where I started tinkering and creating at a young age. By high school, my bedroom walls and ceiling were covered in colorful paintings that I made during bouts of insomnia or anxiety. Into adulthood, the creative poison is as strong as ever. I'm constantly trying to expel it from my brain. Wow. Okay.
Oh, well, his bio is way better than mine.
Yeah, who wrote that?
Did you write that when you were like up in the middle of the night?
Basically, yes.
So, Chris, what were you tinkering and creating with at a young age?
Oh, all kind. I was constantly taking something apart.
Okay, I see.
You know, I did a lot of spent a lot of time in my father's garage, rooting through various things, seeing how they worked, all that kind of stuff.
Okay. So you didn't go out and kill animals and dissect them?
No, nothing like that.
Okay. Just checking. It'd have been okay, you know. I'm not judging you if that's what you wanted to do, you know. And so the creative process has always been an outlet for you.
Yeah, to me it's a big part of dealing with you know, anxiety, depression, all that kind of stuff. I'm completely self-taught. So I, you know, every, you know, my career is has absolutely nothing to do with any sort of creative endeavor. So this is like my outlet and sort of dealing with stress and all that kind of
Yeah.
stuff.
What's the day job, Chris? I'm again, apologies if I may have asked you that back in show 90 something.
Yeah, I'm a product manager. I work in the inventory products industry. Let's just say that.
Okay.
Very, very exciting thing. Very exciting stuff.
Is that bits of kit that make up laboratories, equipment?
It's right now. I spent a lot of time in the chemical industry, but right now I'm in like test tube racks, beakers, flasks, all that kind of.
Borosite glass or something, is it? So
Borosilicate, yep.
borosilicate glass. Yeah. There you go. It's all the random bits of knowledge I know. We may have had this conversation before. It sounds awfully familiar. Anyway, yeah, I think you're not alone, are you, in having a job that pays the bill, and I hope you sort of enjoy. But most jobs that pay reasonably well come with a certain amount of stress and anxiety, don't they?
Yeah, I've gone through various phases of dabbling with specific things like instrument making, guitar building, that type of thing. I went through a pretty long phase of paper mache sculpture, which I have started to incorporate a little bit into camera building, which maybe we can talk about at some point. But pinhole photography, I got into probably about 8 years or so ago. During sort of a life event kind of situation, and I found a book at a bookstore that had like a pinhole camera kit in it.
Oh,
And
yeah.
from that, yeah, from that point, it was something to do with my daughter actually, who was probably about 8 years old or so at the time. And from that point forward, it's been just full steam ahead.
What you and Heather both share in common, that you're both part of the New Jersey pinhole. Can I say it like that? Is that you say New Jersey? Is it?
That's how most people say it. You can say
Yeah.
it
Okay. You're part of the New Jersey Pinhole Club. We'll
if
talk specifically about that in a minute. But Chris, you mentioned guitars, and that usefully segues us into me offering my congratulations on being second to Danny Kalkove in just second, okay? I did toy with having you on because we only really have winners on this show,
you
in the
want. Gotta rub
Well,
it
thank you. If you, if I'm
Yeah.
good, if I'm gonna be second, that's the photo to be second place to. I'll say that
Yeah.
much.
Well, so for people who don't know what I'm rambling on about, it's the Holger Week 2022, which was last year because we haven't had Holger Week 2023 yet. And the Lenses podcast has judged the pinhole section for the last few years. And we picked two color photos, which was unusual. But both really, really strong images. I actually put yours, Chris. You were my favorite. That Danny was second, but I was overridden by Corey, who swapped it around. But
Well,
yeah,
when you have Danny
you're
on, when you have
yeah.
Danny on, I'm going to listen to that one to make sure if that story holds up.
Yeah, well, he was meant to be on with you today, of course. And as far as Danny's concerned, we cancelled today's podcast. I haven't actually told him that we've gone ahead with it and just got Heather in instead.
Man, so now I'm second place too. Chris,
Yeah.
what a bunch of losers around
Yeah,
here.
no, you're probably at least third place, Heather.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Do you have a Holger camera, Heather?
I do. Yeah, I
Have
have
you entered? Have you entered? Did you
only
enter?
once. Only
Okay.
once. Yeah, and I didn't
And
win.
oh, so you threw your toys out the pram and said, "Oh, that's right. I've not won, so I'm never entering again."
No, things just get in the way, but I'm always a little bit jealous of the Holga week. There's so much hubbub about it, and I want to get involved. So I think this is the year I got to get back into it.
Yeah, and Mr. Holger has done so well with it after he picked it up. I mean, it's been a thing for a long time, hasn't it? But he's turned it into something which gets a load of press now, a load of coverage in the
Absolutely. It's
web.
really cool.
Yeah, more so I think than Polaroid Week did, which was, probably my favorite week really, but closely followed by Holger Week these days. But you're, so we, you, the, your entry, Chris, was something called Quasar, wasn't it? Which is a guitar and some spinning lights and stuff.
Yeah. So there was a bit of it was a double exposure, a bit of light painting with some mm-hmm. Christmas lights and a turntable, and yeah. then basically just clamping the camera to the neck of a guitar and standing there for about 20 minutes while it exposed in a dark room.
Oh, so there was no ambient light apart from the light from the Christmas tree.
Yeah, there was
lights.
Just a spotlight, like a garage drop light is basically what I used. Just make sure that light doesn't get in the...
And did you manage to nail the exposure just through... because you've done that sort of thing before, or did you use any kind of cleverness to develop it? Or was it hit and miss?
Not really. I mean, usually what I'll do... because I do a lot of that sort of light painting stuff, and I've done some others since then. But I'll just use the Pinhole Assist app to get a basic measurement. It'll tell you, let's say it says 8 minutes. I'll just cut it by a third, basically.
Okay.
Just to keep the background dark.
Yep.
And then, you know, don't stand up against a wall. Keep things behind you as far away as possible so that all that light fall off happens.
And I think you showed on your Instagram reels. Is that the right term? Have I got that right? Reels?
Yeah.
Stories?
Yeah, I made a little reel. Basically, to get the spirally spinning effect, I have a bicycle wheel that I clamp to my workbench and put the camera on there and just hang some Christmas lights from the ceiling. Funny story about the bicycle wheel is I was just, within the past couple of weeks, was doing the same type of light painting thing with my Zero Image, and it flew off the bicycle wheel and broke.
Oh!
Oh no!
I glued it back together, though.
Yeah, you're the second person I know who's actually broken the body of their Zero. Alex Yates dropped his, I think, in a hotel room, and it smashed. Yeah. You don't want to be having to buy a new one of those, do you? Really?
Yeah, they're hard to come by.
Yeah. Okay. So, Heather.
Yeah.
We read your bio out. What else have you got to say for yourself then? Tell folks about your way into pinhole photography briefly.
My way was also self-taught, which to me, I'm currently a photography teacher. I've been teaching at a high school for like 13 years. And pinhole photography, I feel, is one of like the most formative projects to get students to understand how photography works. So I don't know how I went through a high school program and got a college degree in photography and was never taught about pinhole. Or maybe my memory just serves me incorrect, but I truly do not have any recollection of ever being taught pinhole photography. And my senior year of college, I was doing a like senior thesis photo project on this abandoned gingerbread castle amusement park that was in my hometown. And
I love the sound of that.
Yeah.
I love that you can have such things in America. Where else in the world would you have an abandoned gingerbread? What was it? Theme park?
Yeah. Gingerbread.
I mean, it would just anywhere else, it would get flattened and they'd build a shopping center on it or something. For goodness sake.
It's still standing. It's, yeah, it's a really cool place. And it was just right down the road. And I was photographing it with my large format camera. And then, you know, I'm embarrassed that I truly don't remember exactly how it happened, but I wound up purchasing, or how I taught myself, or why I wanted to photograph it in pinhole. But I purchased one of those like Baltic birch wood 4x5 pinhole cameras from B&H.
Mm-hmm.
Just found it in catalog, ordered it, and really fell in love with it. I used that pinhole camera for years. It ended up being the camera I took with me on like every vacation. I really loved it for my vacation photos. And eventually it kind of sat on the shelf for a few years. I got really wrapped up in digital photography. I opened up a business that's still successful doing family photography, family portraiture. and, you know, really got wrapped up in building my business and working with digital cameras and teaching myself digital photography so that I could teach my high school students. And maybe, I don't know, maybe like 7 years of doing digital, I was just feeling like a hole in me. Like I was getting burnt out. I was kind of losing my passion for digital photography in a way. It just felt like something was missing. And I realized that what I was missing was the truly like hands-on process. Like I missed working in a dark room like I had when I was in college, and just trying to think of like, what could I pursue to fill this like creative hole in me? What is the exact opposite of digital photography? And I was like, pinhole. I have to get my pinhole camera out. And ever since then, kind of like what Chris said, you just go full force. So I've been doing pinhole photography like almost exclusively for quite a number of years. But for me, getting back into it, it was just, this is the opposite of digital photography. This is what I need. I need something slower, more hands-on. Just like Chris, I grew up tinkering with things too. I loved pulling stuff apart, seeing how it worked. So building my own cameras was really interesting to me. And, you know, just getting back into the darkroom.
I think when you were on before, we talked about a lot about your work putting pinhole cameras out in nature and forgetting about them and that stuff. And I read just recently that you, and I don't know if we talked about this last time and I've just forgotten, which is quite likely, you put one up every birthday.
Yes, I do.
And you leave it up for a full year till the next birthday?
A whole year. Mm-hmm. Capturing the sun for that whole year. Yep. Yeah. So yeah, I call it solar journaling. So sometimes I'll leave them up for a day. Like for example, I photographed the sun on my brother's wedding day. And like on a day, if I can kind of time it properly, if I know that someone is giving birth or like one of my nieces is being born or my friend's kids, I'll put a camera out. I do it for my birthday every year. I put a camera out for my vacations. So kind of like a little journal entry.
Yeah, so it's not really recording, you know, if you said it's like a birthday event, you're not, it's outside in the wild and recording sun, but the key factor is that you know that image is recorded, it's linked to that day, that event, it's not of the event itself.
Exactly.
That's a really nice idea, isn't it?
Yeah.
When did you first hit upon that? Because most people, they said, well, they take their, I love the idea of taking pinhole cameras to parties and normal events. Nick does it really well. He just uses his camera. Nick Voracek uses his camera just like a diary, but he's recording actual events. But you're recording moments in nature on the day that the event is happening. It's not of the event itself.
Yes, exactly. I think the first one I did was actually my brother's wedding day. And he got married on like a really beautiful marina out on Long Island. And I put the camera on the marina itself. So that photographed sort of like the landscape and the sun on that one day. And I just really loved the idea of that. So I started doing it more often on very specific or what I would consider to be like important moments. I also photographed the sun on the solstices, so summer and winter solstice.
And do you, these images, are they been brought together in exhibitions or books? And do you title them? Like would there be a, I'm conscious I'm throwing lots of questions at you here, but I've got this image of a solar graph, you know, and some, and there are lots of amazing solar graphs around and yours are beautiful. And it's, you know, got some trees in and sun trails and some different colors where the paper's burnt to different colors. Mm-hmm. And then you just title it My Brother's Wedding. And I mean, that must cause, I mean, what your mind must explode when you see, when, if I saw an image like that and it said My Brother's Wedding or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you title them like that?
I do title them like that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so the only place they're published is on my webpage with a little note about the specific dates and what event it was.
I love it.
But I haven't had them in an exhibition, but I will say one of them was taken kind of out of context and in a really cool way. It was used for an album cover for Nick Rhodes and Wendy Bevan. Nick Rhodes is from Duran Duran.
Yeah, I wonder if it was that Nick Rhodes.
Yeah. Yep. So they have a music project together, and they licensed some of my artwork, and one of them is an album cover for them.
Oh, well, that's brilliant.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, at least they didn't just go online and find it and use it.
Yeah, no, they did the right thing.
Okay. So we'll come back to some more really interesting, cool things that you're doing, Heather. But Chris, live up to that, mate. That's all I can say to you. tell us a little bit. Let you talk a little bit about the New Jersey Pinhole Club. Tell us about that, and tell us about the exhibition that's coming up as well.
Yes. So, well, first of all, I'll take this opportunity to say a gigantic thank you to Heather, because this will be the first time that I'll have something hanging on a wall in public. So I'm very, very grateful for the work that Heather's been doing, and you know, including me in this. And I feel kind of bad because it's very new to me, so I feel like I can't help as much as I'd like to, but I'm very, very, very thankful to be part of the club and to be part of the show. Heather knows the history. She's sort of the leader of the group, but I came aboard. Technically it's the New Jersey Pinhole Club, although I live in Pennsylvania, which is the next state over. Mm-hmm. But I came aboard, I guess it's maybe a year ago or so. And there's a lot of people in my normal life that look at some of these photos that I do, and they just don't get it. Like even my own parents, I gave them a framed photo recently, and they were like, okay, they didn't really understand what it was. And to have sort of this group of misfits that you can. That don't even bat an eyelash at some of the weird stuff that we all do, and to be able to interact with them through social media mainly. And last year we went on a photo walk for Pinhole Day, and those things are very inspiring and that kind of thing.
How many members are there? Heather can answer this. Do you belong to the New Jersey Pinhole Club, and do you all sort of go along every Tuesday to meet in the village hall?
Well, we have 10 members all together, and we don't have formalized like monthly meetings. We're a pretty informal club. Like Chris said, we communicate pretty often through social media, and we get together a few times a year in different groupings. Most recently we had like the biggest grouping. I think just about all of us were there together at Sharon Harris's house. But we try to get together for like Worldwide Pinhole Photography Day. And I try to organize a group exhibition for the club every year. So we'll get together for that. And, just some various other days through the year, either to do photo walks or just hang out, get lunch together. Actually, Chris, the first time I met you was at my house. It was a smaller meeting, and we were looking through I have a collection of the old pinhole journals.
Yeah.
We were going through those.
Yeah.
So we're pretty informal.
So I quite like the idea, because if you were really pretentious as a group, you'd call yourself a collective, wouldn't you, really?
I guess that's true. Yeah.
You'd call yourself the New Jersey Pinhole Collective. That's much more artistic and cutting edge. But I like the fact that you called it a club. It does sort of conjure up images of church halls and cups of tea, and camera clubs that I used to belong to as a kid. It's got me thinking, actually, because there's a group of us in East Anglia, so on the eastern coast of the UK, the little round knobbly bit that pokes out at the bottom right-hand side. Mm-hmm. And there's probably half a dozen at least of us who meet up periodically, you know. And it started off with just me and Alex Yates at Christmas time, just having a Christmas meetup. Mm-hmm. He lives in Norwich, where there was a transatlantic get together pinhole meetup for Pinhole Week. There's a few of them, Monty Smith and Alex and a whole host of others, sort of Americans and Europeans who meet up once a year, either whatever in Europe. And you know, it's quite an undertaking to travel to America to go and have a pinhole meetup. But you know, I know Alex does it, and others do. Others do. Too. I don't know if you guys have ever hooked up with any of them when they've been over there for.
No, I was just thinking I'm gonna have to contact them and figure out where they go.
Mm. Yeah. So and a few years ago it was in Norwich in East Anglia. So there's a few of us who meet up, and I think, well, yeah, and I've loosely called it the East Anglia Pinhole Mafia.
I love that.
because there's some people who just feel excluded because they live so far away. So I said, yeah, well, that's because, you know, we're like the mafia.
In New Jersey, mafia has a whole
other side connotation.
I don't think we can say that we're a mafia. No. We'll be in trouble.
No. So maybe to be a club, you don't really have to have like a weekly meeting. I quite like the model that you're using. So we could do something similar. I don't know.
Absolutely.
You know, so Alex, if you're listening, and Jimmy Hickford and Kath Cartman and Neil Piper and Joe Baker, a.k.a. Evil Chutney, if you guys, maybe we could form the East Anglia Pinhole Club.
I think you should.
Mm.
So for us in New Jersey, it started the same way. Like I knew Chris Marinari because we lived in the same town and we had friends in the same circle. And then I met Jeff McConnell through Instagram, but him and Maurice Fitzpatrick were already friends and they came to one of my art openings. So, and then I also met Marissa and I was like, we all live like nearby. I would get together with Chris separately, get together with Jeff separately. Sometimes the group of us would get together, and we had been doing this over a number of years, just these little informal get-togethers. And we'd always say like, oh, we should start a club. We should start a club. And finally, I was like, you know what? We have a club.
we're in much the same position, but we're missing a Heather. Do you know what I mean by that? There's always someone in a group who wants to take hold of it, and
maybe you could be the Heather, Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
You've got enough going on.
I've got a lot going on. Yeah.
But I will say, having a club, it's opened up a lot of opportunities for us, because if I was to go to a gallery or a museum and be like, hey, I have a group of friends and we like to make pinhole photos, like, will you show our work? It doesn't seem as enticing as if I'm able to say, like, we have a club. They're more likely to.
Oh, well, I think you'd get far more doors would open for you if you called yourself the New Jersey Pinhole Collective, though.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Mm.
What do you think, Chris? Should we change
your name? I think a vote is in order.
Yeah. We need to vote at our next meeting.
But, you know, we had Joe Baker, Evil Chutney, on Twitter. Does Joe do Instagram? I can't actually remember now. Anyway, if you're in the Twitter sphere, look out for Joe Baker, Evil Chutney. He loves using 35mm canisters and making pinhole pictures of dinosaurs and weird things. So he organized a little exhibition, which was for anyone in the Lenses Podcast Facebook group. It was just as COVID was breaking out, and we had an exhibition at a cafe in Norwich in the historic area, and we sent him pictures and he had them printed out and framed in some cheap frames, and they hung them on the wall in the cafe, and we had a nice little poster in the window. And Rennie Vonk came over from the Netherlands. I hope he wasn't too disappointed. He seemed to have a nice time. Yeah, so he flew over, and it was just as COVID was breaking out, because we were all kind of sat in the cafe area together, and no one quite knew whether we should be sitting together or, you know, the government at the time were telling us, "Oh no, you don't need to wear masks. Silly, don't be silly. There's no evidence that masks help. just breathe. Just cough over each other. You'll be fine."
Oh no.
So
weird times.
It was weird time, yeah. And then that was the last. I think that was the last time many of us met. I've just been talking on separately and also in the Lenses Podcast Facebook group about a meetup around World Pinhole Photography Day, and we were going to, I'd floated the idea of meeting up on the North Norfolk coast. This is the proper Norfolk, you know, not the one you have. And then I realized I work Sunday evening, so it's quite tricky because it's probably about a 3-hour drive. And to make it work, really, it ought to be done on the Sunday, really, because, you know, that's the day, isn't it? I thought, oh, well, maybe we could do it on the Saturday, but that kind of defeats the object. Really, it's a bit like having Christmas Day on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the East Anglian Pinhole Mafia are actually going to get together for Pinhole Day, or maybe we need to find another location, folks listening.
Yeah, something a little bit more central.
Yeah, I think so, because Cromer is a bit like the end of the world for most people. So maybe we find somewhere a bit different. Mm. So, sorry, go on.
Yeah, I was gonna say, geography is a little tough for us, Heather. I mean, right? I mean, New Jersey is a deceivingly large state.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Some people are up north, some people are down south. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what's the furthest that, if you take your 10 members, if you all wanted to meet up, is there a sort of central point?
I think Trenton, where I used to live, would be the central. Probably. Point mm-hmm. for at least Christian, who lives up north, and then Sharon, who lives down south. That would be central for them. But you actually, Chris, are how far is Trenton from you? An hour?
Yeah, it's a little over an hour drive.
Well, so that's not very central for you.
Yeah, when I came down to your place, I think it was maybe an hour and 15 or so. So that probably is the most central place for everybody.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Chris, are you using homemade cameras on your website? Which is, if you're desperately looking up Chris's name, it's Chris with a K, but then he's also known as Dead Pinhole on Instagram at Dead_Pinhole. So yeah,
my preference is always to use a homemade camera. I love building them. I do have, you know, of course, a Holga pinhole, which I use for certain things like the close-up flowers that I do.
Yep. I think we were speaking to you about those when you came on last time, weren't we? After.
Yeah, I think so.
When you showed.
And
those.
I have a Zero Image 2000, which I actually have modified to shorten the focal length. I found the original dimensions of that camera a little boring for my own taste, so I shortened it up to about 10 millimeters or so. It's probably why it broke when it flew off the bicycle wheel, but those are the two sort of. Oh, and I have an Ondu 35 millimeter that I use. That's a really good camera to take if you're traveling somewhere, because it's so well built and that type of thing, so it's just easy to use. But mostly I make cameras either with an Altoid tin and 35 millimeter film, or I have 4x5 film backs that I use with cigar boxes and things like that.
Yeah.
No, you have to tell them about your sculptural ones. You can't leave out the best cameras.
Yes. So during the pandemic, I sort of brought back some of the paper mache skills that I had developed years ago, probably 20 or 25 years ago, to make a series of film pinhole cameras that are basically in themselves are sculptures. And a lot of the paper mache work that I had been doing were making creatures like monsters and aliens and different things. So I started out with making a 120 film pinhole camera that is a little quirky little monster guy, little green monster.
I'm looking at them now. So on on Chris's deadpinhole.com website, you can click on alien cameras or something. Anyway, you'll find it.
Aren't they amazing?
Yeah, they really are.
I love them. You take the eyeball off and that's where the pinhole is.
Yeah, that first one I made was basically, you know, to expose, you take the eyeball off and under there is a pinhole. So that was sort of the theme that I continued with, so just having them all be cyclops. And one of the things that I kind of latched on to is to have the camera or part of the alien be in the photo. So the first one has hands that are outstretched, so the hands will show up in the photo, things like that.
And the arm, bit of the arm as well, probably.
So the idea there is that you're kind of seeing what the alien sees, as if he's landed on Earth, you know, and you're sort of exploring the world through his eyes, or its eyes, I should say.
So I'm looking at one, I think it's a green alien one. There's a few there, and he's got ET type hands reaching either side of the image.
Yeah.
And that's such a clever thing. I think we all need to not sleep or be anxious, and you just come up with wonderful ideas like this, because
the only problem with these cameras is
don't take them out in the rain.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, as someone who's nearing 50 years old, to go out in public with these little crazy little dolls and take pictures, it's a little embarrassing. So I have to sometimes maybe take a shot before I go out to ease my anxiety, my social anxieties.
The furry one doesn't have anything in the frame area, though, does it?
The fur will show up.
Okay.
So I kept the fur kind of long around his eyeball. He also has an anus, so you can take the photo from the back as well as a red scale.
Oh, so you're way ahead of James Guerin with his red scale camera.
Well, when he posted that, I was like, oh, I just made a camera that does that. I didn't tell him it was covered in fur, though.
Well, James, if you're listening, I think this one's much more stylish than yours. It's I can't see its arse, so I can just see its I can just see its eye. And it's a 120, I guess, because the things that look like ears are probably wind-on knobs or something, are they?
That one is 35 millimeter. The other thing I wanted them to be all different. So the first one was 120.
Yes, of course, it would be 35 mil if it's red scale. Sorry, yeah, I'm just being stupid. Yeah, great job, I love it.
And then I have a new one.
You're mad, aren't you? You are.
Oh yeah, I am. You said I was. My bio says I'm into oddities. So, and then I have a new one that I'm just finishing up. That is based. Well, I can tell you guys because I know nobody's listening.
Is this Alien Pinhole Camera 4 landing in 2023?
So the concept with the new one is that there's been some mating involved between the original three.
Oh,
some group sex.
Basically. So between, I have a little
between the green, the green guy, the sort of the weird, well, it's not really an octopus because octopus has got eight legs, but he's got like two tentacles and teeth and an eyeball, and the furry dude.
Yeah, this new one's he's a little larvae, so he's a little small little guy. Just uses it was just a 35 millimeter film canister that it's built around.
This is so cool. I can't wait to see. Oh my God. I'm actually on your webpage right now too. And when he grows up, he wants to be a ska musician. I am so impressed.
Well, I figured they all needed a bio. So I gave them all a couple fun facts for each one.
Oh, this is great.
That's awesome. Heather, let's just lurch back to you. You've been up to quite a lot of things in the last year or so. I only know that because you posted it on a recent Instagram post, and some of them were solo shows. You've created, I said that last time, curated. You've created lots of things, but you've created, curated, I can't say it, shows. Artist residency, I'd love to hear about your book, which I don't think you would have published that when we last spoke. I've had a look at that, and if I'm not so broke just at the minute, I will place an order, because you can plug that in a minute, because it sounds just something that fill a bit of a gap on my bookshelf.
Not to jump in, but Heather
jump in.
I'm going to Heather did something with, you might want to talk about, Heather, is the spotted lantern flies, which I find absolutely brilliant. So that might be something.
Okay,
worth talking
start
about.
There. I have no idea what you're talking about, but
you're lucky. Where from?
It can't be any.
You should make a camera based off of that, maybe.
It can't be any weirder than alien group sex pinhole camera baby.
I guess that's true. That could be the title of this episode: Alien Group Sex Pinhole Baby.
Yeah, we haven't had any funk alien. I'll just write that down.
We'll get some interesting
sex
listeners.
Pinhole. I wonder if we'll get allowed to. Can I use the word sex in the title? Alien Group Sex Pinhole Baby. with Heather and Chris.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay. Some rumors going around now. Were the aliens?
Yep. Okay, that's show 129, Alien Group Sex Pinhole Baby with Heather and Chris.
Oh, this is great.
Right, go on then. I've forgotten what you're talking about. Something to do with flies.
Oh, yeah. Where Chris and I are from in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and now rapidly spreading throughout the whole East Coast of the USA, there is this, it's absolutely beautiful, actually. It looks like a moth or a butterfly with really beautiful wings, but it's an insect that came over from Asia. Its eggs were on a shipping pallet, and when the eggs hatched the following year, the population has just like grown and grown and grown, and they have no predators. So there are no birds or other bugs or anything that will eat them. So they're exponentially growing, and they are like sucking the sap out of the trees, which is hurting the tree's Cambrian layer, which eventually will cause disease and death to the trees.
Do they focus on any particular tree or just any tree?
Yeah. They like sweet trees. So a lot of fruit trees, any tree that actually is native to Asia, that is currently growing where we live, they love those trees, which Tree of Heaven is their favorite. But out of our native plants, they like grapevines, they like fig trees, you know, and cherry trees, maple, anything that has like a sugary sap inside of it. And they are peeing sweet urine, I guess, all over the tree and the ground, which is then causing molds to grow. So our forests are just turning like pitch black with this black sooty molds everywhere. The tree's health is decaying and the bugs are just everywhere.
What are they called, these flies?
Lantern flies.
A what? Lantern fly?
Yeah, a spotted lantern fly.
Okay, I'm Googling it. You carry on talking while I Google it.
Okay, yeah, because they're so prolific, it's actually kind of becoming a cultural phenomenon. There are a lot of like our government, you know, newspapers, online, everyone's telling us that we need to go out and squash them. That like, since no bugs or birds are going to eat them, humans have to do it. People are making artwork about it. And I've even seen like pub crawls. So you can go to like Philadelphia and go on a pub crawl and squash lantern flies on the sidewalk as you drink your beer and walk around the city. So it's just like a phenomenon. And, you know, I'm an environmentalist, and of course I'm concerned about this as well. I'm also really concerned about their spread up north to Vermont, which is nearby where my cabin is, where all of the maple syrup trees are. So I started making artwork about the spotted lantern flies, kind of in a kitschy way, of trying to be satirical, since we're being told that we need to squash them, I was catching them alive and squashing them on photo paper under glass and then making lumen prints out of them.
Well, at least if you're killing them, you're putting it to an artistic good exactly. use, aren't you?
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's part of it too, is that as an environmentalist, or just as a human, it doesn't matter if I like the environment at all. It feels really weird to go out into the woods and kill something that is alive. That sure. just seems very unnatural to me, and especially because they're so beautiful. So, you know, there's some debate about it as well. But either way, I was making artwork about it. I started combining chemigram shoe prints to these squashes that I was making with the bugs, and eventually started experimenting in the dark room because I had collected a bunch of their bodies from the spring, summer, and fall, and over the winter when they aren't alive, their eggs are dormant. I was in the dark room working and getting experimental, which is actually the basis for, or part of the basis for the book that I wrote. I was working with a combination of photograms of the lantern flies, combining that with pinhole photography, with chemigram, and with just traditional negative enlargement.
Let me just stop you here because I've just lurched onto the thread called Squash Them on your website. Okay, yes. So James Guerin, who was on a few weeks ago, was talking about making chemigrams, and he did explain it to me, and I've forgotten what it is. So for those who are ignorant like me, wow, I've just seen a picture of your flies on a wall. I've just made up of a couple of hundred at least small images. Anyway, yeah. Wow, okay, 2x3x3 cameraless squash prints. So, chemigram, just define that for listeners, please.
Yeah, it'll have to be in my own words. I don't know how to define chemigram by the dictionary, but it would be you playing with the chemistry in the darkroom in a way you typically wouldn't. In most cases, you don't even need to have an image exposed on photo paper. You just literally paint with the chemistry itself. You can do it with the lights on. So with the lights on, the paper is continuously exposing. And as you paint developer or splatter, or, you know, there's a variety of ways you can put the developer on the paper. And depending on how long the developer is on the paper and the dilution of it, the paper will turn darker. In certain areas, you can add fixer to it to have the paper remain white, combining stop bath with it to stop developer in certain areas. And you're basically creating, in most cases, abstract artworks with chemistry developer on silver, I'm sorry, with the photochemistry on the silver gelatin paper.
Well, that's far better explained than the way James did it. And okay. Just to throw James under the bus as well. And I think it must be something. Kai Lewis has been on our show before, and Kai's lovely, and I've met her a few times in London, and she does work that combines projects on the coast. You'll have to, if you're not familiar with Kai's work, KY.
I am. I think she does chromacidic printing, which is very similar to chemigram. Yeah.
I just remember her talking about splashing fixer and developer at times when they shouldn't. Anyway, she's got these, she makes these, the body of work I'm thinking of is stuff she made on the coast, on the south coast, a place called Dungeness. And so there's a pinhole image, but they take on these sort of golden black hues and with, you know, with different fiery effects, you know. But it's in the same area as what we're talking about with squashing flies, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Anyway, so go on.
Yeah, so that was what my solo exhibition in Vermont was about, the spotted lantern flies. I did have pinhole photography work in that show as well with the spotted lantern flies. And I used a lot of the experimental printing processes I was doing for that body of work to publish the book that I wrote last year called Don't Fix It Yet.
Right. So this sort of work that you've been doing with the flies and chemigram, that's part of the subject matter of your book, is it the Don't Fix It Yet book?
Yeah, so the
Technique,
book will
chemi.
walk you through like four different techniques
Okay.
that you can try out. It gives like step-by-step processes on how to use an unfixed silver gelatin print in like four unique ways.
So I'm very impressed that you've got a book and you're selling it. I understand that, but I suppose it's no different, is it? I suppose to a celebrity chef who's very proud of his art, publishing a book telling other people how to do it. Because one of the things that bugs me a bit, well, one of many things that bugs me really, is when somebody shares an image on social media, and the first comment is, "Well, how did you do that? It's often what camera did you use, or what lens did you use, or what paper did you use, or what developer did you use, and how long did you develop it for?" And I think, well, okay, I'm going to go and have a meal somewhere, and I'm not immediately calling the chef out and asking for all his secrets. But you're kind of doing that. But I suppose it's one thing publishing it, but you still got to have the creative brain to come up with something unique like you've done here.
Yeah, and Andrew, you had talked about before we started the recording about, I think you mentioned the downsides of being in a club, and there's like
Clearly,
this.
if you were a collective, there wouldn't be any downsides, but being in a club,
But
it must have loads of downsides.
I guess that's the one downside is like I see like to me this series and this show that she had is absolutely brilliant, and there's like this little bit of envy of like how am I ever gonna. I could never do it, think of anything like this. I mean,
I
she,
know.
Heather, you even had frames made with the wood that was impacted by the flies, right? Is that what some of these frames are made of?
Yes, so they're actually not impacted specifically by the flies, but by other insects that are boring. So the wood that I used actually came from my boyfriend, who is an extremely talented woodworker, and he used to live in Vermont, and he like ethically retrieved silver maple wood, which is the type of tree that would be affected by the spotted lanternflies. So when the boring beetles go into the wood, it not only affects the Cambrian layer of the tree, but it allows moisture into the tree and allows fungus to grow. So although the tree is dying, the wood is exceptionally beautiful, filled with holes and like ambrosia markings. And he used that wood to make the frames. So although it's not like very specifically like a tree that was affected by a spotted lantern fly, it was more to show like having that connection of like an insect really could do a lot of damage to a tree. This is the type of tree that you in Vermont need to be cautious of the spotted lantern flies affecting. And like here's a frame, sort like framing the artwork to basically the whole show was just an extremely educational exhibition for the people of Vermont. They don't have a population of spotted lantern flies yet, but I do think they will this year. So having the show last year, I was able to educate them on like what do you do when you see one, what is one, what do they do to the forest. And having my boyfriend Joshua make those frames, I think just like totally solidified that concept to show people what could happen to the trees.
You see, we have all sorts of people. I speak to loads of people through the podcast and just in social media, and people talk about art and photography, and I think what you are, Heather, you're a proper artist in the whole sense of the word, because you've got a very clear idea and direction, and you've got a message. The message is this sort of environmental one, and you're bringing all the elements together in sort of environmental sphere, and creating works of art to raise awareness about it. And I think that I just couldn't even begin do what you do, I have to say. And I think that's probably where Chris is coming from. He's saying, oh, actually, you know, mm-hmm. you know, I could never do that. But then we all do our own things, Chris. You know, you're into alien group sex. So you know, I'm sure Heather wouldn't have thought of that for a moment.
No, never.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that we've mentioned in some of the group chats that we've had, Heather, is like everybody in this group has their own sort of niche, you know, it's their own little special thing that they bring to the table.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's one of the most exciting parts about pinhole photography, I think, is that you're using this extremely simple camera, and you'd think everyone in the world could only produce this one result with this simple little camera, but there are just so many ways that you can pursue pinhole photography, and how you pursue it completely affects the outcome of your image. It's just wild to me how this tiny, tiny little hole in basically a piece of garbage, you know, or I don't know, at least I make my cameras out of garbage for the most part. But how this tiny little hole can just produce wildly different results. It's a fascinating.
I don't know who it was who we had on in the early days. It was it might have been you. We had somebody on the show. God, I'm hopeless. Who would go out and find cans and things on the street, and then he would make them into, he or she would make, it wasn't me. No. Sounds like the sort of thing you might have done.
But it sounds like something I would do.
And so he was, the artwork was made from, the images were made from found objects, you know.
I think I know who you're talking about. I can't remember.
Yeah. So this is trouble. You see, we've had 129 shows, and I can't remember what we spoke about last month, let alone 3 years ago. One of the things I often repeat myself because, well, you know, I've only got so much to say. One of the things that I find difficult is concentrating on one area, and I'm full of admiration for photographers who are able or printmakers, you know, artists like yourself who are able to concentrate on one thing. You know, sometimes I like to think I just like to get rid of my lensed cameras and just concentrate on pinhole work. Sometimes I think, oh, well, I'll just give up with pinhole because I'm not very good at it, and concentrate on lens work, or maybe I want to concentrate on color printing, or maybe I want to get back into lisp printing, or maybe I want to do more salt printing, and then I don't have time.
I don't think you're alone.
Then I don't have time to do any of those things, you know.
Yeah.
But Heather, you seem, you know, you're very much now homing in, you know, if you think of water gyrating and going down a plug hole, on the outer side of it, this big circle going round and round and round, and as you're getting closer to the plug hole, you're concentrating more, and you're closer to the plug hole than I am.
I don't know. I'm kind of happy that it seems like that from the outside, but I'm similar to you, Andrew, though. Like, although I was working on this spotted lantern fly series, getting it ready for the exhibition, I was working on so many other things too. Like, I have a little bit of ADHD in that way where I struggle to focus. I'm doing regular 35 millimeter, like, you know, just traditional SLR camera work, but also working with my digital camera, making cyanotypes, doing chemigrams, working on like a multitude of projects at a time. I don't think I'm very focused.
Okay. Well, I'll take it all back then. What about you, Chris? Are you
focused? No, I have the same struggles, but I've started to, I think actually by, because I, for a while there, I kind of didn't have a website, so I rebuilt it over this winter, and doing that helped me understand the little paths that I tend to take. I guess sometimes I revisit the same locations, or I do the same type of camera building. So it's helped me understand, like, okay, what is it that I am in this sort of pinhole world? And it's kind of focused my brain a little bit, I guess. But I struggle with the exact same thing. You want to do it all.
Yeah. I think that's good, though, for us, because all of us are finding that there's so much interesting stuff out in the world, and we want to explore it. I like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But maybe we all need to redo our web pages then and do a tight edit of our work
and
analyze ourselves.
Well, I don't really have one. So I have online presence, but I don't really have anything in it. I think it would just be another thing that would just consume me if I had a website. There's some weird noises going on in the background. Before people start complaining about clicking noises, that's not me. So I apologize for any weird noises going on, but we've managed to get through nearly an hour of chat without too much weird noises. I think Jimmy Hickford normally complains if there's too much background noise going on.
Sorry Jimmy.
Yeah, we need to up our game and be. Oh, let's stop now. So who moved?
I think there's somebody mowing their lawn in my neighborhood.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Oh, well, just get out the window and
mowing their lawn in March. It's March.
Don't they know we're trying to record a podcast?
Yeah, they're doing something out there.
So anyway, we probably rudely interrupted you, Chris. You were talking about your lack of focus as well.
Yeah, I think I've closed out that thought, but yeah, I struggle from the same thing. You want to do everything, and you see things people have done, and you're like, oh, I got to try that, and
yeah,
it just causes my brain in particular to same thing that Heather just said. It causes your brain to just start overthinking and getting unfocused and things.
Yeah, I think. Well, it's one of the joy. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it, with all forms of analog photography. There are so many different rabbit holes to fall down. And some people fulfill that need by buying more and more cameras, and I can understand that, you know, because many of them are beautiful things. But, and other people want to try every single different film and developer combinations and so it goes on, and you know, then once you get into the alternative processes side of things, I mean, that's a huge, you know, alternative area to fall into, isn't it? You know, to try and work out where does one find the time to do all these things? You know, and I mean, you've got to be properly retired, or and then you haven't got many years left. That's really depressing, isn't it? To fit it all in.
It has to be a better way.
Ah, and then we've all got family to deal with and all the boring things like decorating and working. Goodness me. Yeah, I think maybe we shouldn't just get too stressed by it all. We should just enjoy it. And clearly you do, Chris, with your alien pinhole cameras. And Heather, the joy in what you do comes across. We're going to close, I think, very very shortly. But I wanted to just ask you a little bit about the artist residency that you mentioned.
Oh yeah, so this year is going to be the second year I'm hosting it. I have a little tiny cabin on 50 acres in upstate New York, in the like eastern Adirondacks, Vermont border area of New York, and I had been applying for artist residencies over the past few years and kind of sifting through what's available online and having this feeling that a lot of them seem, I feel bad saying this publicly and knowing this is going to get published, but I just feel like many of them seem to be a little bit scammy to me. It seems like they expect a lot of money out of the artist to go. They provide almost nothing. And then they expect you to do like workshops and lectures and give them artwork and like publish books. And it just seems like they're just so expensive. It's not worth it. So I was thinking, well, why am I applying to all these other residencies? I have this amazing little place in the woods. I could just make my own residency for myself. And then I started to think that I'm sure I'm not the only artist on the planet who has these same feelings, that it would be nice if someone could just give you, of course this would be nice, someone could just like give you a free place to stay and make art for a week. So I was like, well, why don't I do that? This would be a really great way for me to give back to the artist community. You know, I don't have much to give, but I do have this property, and I, you know, so I conjured up this idea last summer, and I took applications online. I wanted to make sure that the person who I chose was a good fit, because my cabin does not have electricity. It does not have, or at least it didn't have running water. I've recently drilled a well.
Oh, yes. I heard about your well. Yes.
Yes. I knew that would come up in conversation. Tell everybody about my well. So I needed them to be a good fit in terms of the type of art that they could make, but also knowing that they would be on my property with me for a week, I wanted to make sure that that was good. My cabin is very small, so the person who comes to the residency will have to camp as well, either in a tent or in a camper. So we ended up, or my cousin, who was also going to come to the residency that week, she's an artist, like a drawer and painter. The two of us looked through the applications and we chose Alia Bensleman, who is just a really fantastic painter and illustrator. So she came and spent the week up there and we had a fantastic time. It was wonderful. And I'm going to do it all again this year. So I'm currently taking applications. Anyone can come as long as your artwork can be made without electricity. And as long as you're like competent at camping, obviously, since you'll be staying in a tent, your artwork needs to be something that's able to be made outdoors. But it is a really nice place. It's, you know, I have rivers and streams. You can go hiking. Just there's
so woods, what role does the cabin play in all this? You're making people sleep outside and
Nothing really. It's more about the property. So in my advertising of the residency, I don't mention that there's a cabin on the property at all.
Okay.
It's a very tiny one-room cabin. So I'm not comfortable sharing that space with a stranger.
Oh, I see. Right.
You know what I mean? So I don't even mention that there is a cabin.
Right.
Because
it could turn all... there's every horror film ever made, you know, there's a cabin in the woods, isn't there?
Exactly. So I sleep in the cabin and
I'm with you now. I'm glad we got that straight.
3 week long vacation to
so you're taking your probably those artists aren't listening to the Lensless podcast, but you know, if you know somebody and who is an artist along the veins that could, you know, gain some inspiration from a week in the woods with Heather,
you know, and who isn't a psychopath.
And if you're not a serial killer, you need
That's
to send your resume in there just saying that you're not a serial killer, and I'm sure she'll consider you.
Exactly. What a serial killer would say.
You can kill spotted flies.
Spotted lantern flies.
And then the other thing, I know I said we were going to draw to close, but I keep forgetting things we haven't talked about. Your pinhole exhibition, I don't know. I know you kind of drove it, Heather, but I'm going to ask Chris about it because I've been asking you lots of things. He may well defer to you. I don't know in the answers, but I'll start with Chris. Chris, the exhibition that the New Jersey Pinhole Collective club are putting on. I know you're not in charge of it, but tell us about that and how it came about. And if you need to ask Heather, ask her.
Sure. So Heather secured us a space at Unique Photo in Philadelphia, which is a small, it's not that small, a small photo shop that has a gallery space.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I think I've heard it mentioned on podcasts before, I think.
Yeah. So the members of the Pinhole Club will have pieces in the exhibit, and we had an open call that was put out, and one of the other members, Jeff, he juried those selections. So there'll be some people sending things in or getting their pieces physically to the gallery that'll be included. And then there's I guess Heather will have a screen that will have a slideshow of some of the other people that throughout the world that submitted pieces, but it'll run from the whole month of April, and then we'll have a closing reception on the last Saturday, which is the 29th of April. So, you know, April's a good month because it's, you know, pinhole month basically.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Heather might have a little more background and how it came about and that kind of thing.
No, that was perfect.
So for folks who don't live in Philadelphia, who won't get to see the slideshow yet, will the slideshow of images be, do you have plans to make it available so folks can see it?
Yeah, absolutely. That wasn't the original plan, but so many people have requested that that I'm going to publish it on YouTube. So I'll post a link to the Lensless Facebook group for sure.
Yeah, because you did put an open call, didn't you, on various sites, and one of them within the Lensless podcast. I don't know how many folks.
What was the total number that came in? It was quite
so
a bit.
Many. About, I think, 182 or 84. And then with the 10 members of the club, it's going to be, you know, just under 200 photos in the slideshow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. And they came from, I believe, 39 different countries, and just such a wide variety of work, you know, solar graphs, pinhole on film, pinhole on paper, color, black and white, portrait, landscape, really conceptual, just such an amazing variety of work.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, look, it's been a pleasure having you both on.
Absolutely. This was so fun. Yeah, actually, Andrew, can I say one more thing before we head out?
Yeah, certainly.
I'm going to mention this eventually in the Lensless podcast Facebook group, but I started this, or last year, I came up with this idea to do a pinhole competition in the month of April, or I'm sorry, in the month of August. So I'm going to base it around National Thrift Store Day, and I'm calling it like the Thrifted Pinhole Challenge. And it'll be all based through Instagram. People will go out to a thrift store, purchase the most ridiculous thing that they can find, turn it into a pinhole camera. Prizes for having the most creative camera, but also the best photo.
I love it. So, what a brilliant idea. Because we just think of, you know, my drawer here is full of coffee tins and things, and some of them I've made into pinhole cameras, and I don't do enough of using, you know, I'm not hugely into making pinhole cameras. I mean, I have done because, you know, it's just another, yet another rabbit hole. But I love the idea of going in and just finding something that isn't a coffee tin, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. It's just something totally ridiculous. I think it'll be super fun. So that'll be August 17th, Thrifted Pinhole.
And that could become a thing, couldn't it?
I hope so. I think it'll be really fun.
And you have an Instagram page for that, Heather?
I do.
Can follow? Do
you? Okay. Yep, the Instagram is just Thrifted Pinhole. And actually, this came out of my jealousy of the Holga Week.
Mm.
I just think Holga Week is so fun. I love it. I just love it so much. I just don't photograph with my Holga pinhole very often.
Yeah.
But I think this would be fun. I know, you know, the pinhole community around the world is just so strong and tight-knit. This would be a fun way for us to all kind of get together and be silly and have some fun and have a challenge.
Well, it sounds like Holga Week's going to be irrelevant pretty soon.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I don't think I can keep them out. And I wouldn't want to either, but.
Okay. So, Chris, if folks want to keep up with what you're doing, where and how might they do that?
Yeah, the best way would be Instagram. So I have dead_pinhole is my Instagram account.
Did you ever explain to us where that came from, dead pinhole?
Well, I like the way it sounds, but I'm also a huge fan of the band The Grateful Dead.
Grateful Dead. Okay, say no more. And Heather, folks want to follow you and don't already,
I think once again Instagram
is
gonna be the best. So for me it's heather.palasek @.art.
Yeah. Okie dokie. Well, you've got me all fired up. Every time I do one of these shows, particularly after 5 or 6 weeks, I get inspired again. I'm constantly re-inspired. And Thrifted Pinhole, I think, is a wonderful thing, and I look forward to that. So as soon as you've got more details, you know, you want to launch it as a thing, please share it into the Lensless podcast Facebook group.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having us.
Chris and great. Yeah, Chris and Heather, yeah, enjoy the rest of your day. And if we don't, we'll probably chat online, but enjoy World Pinhole Photography Day at the end of April.
You too.
Yeah. Whatever folks out there are doing, have a good one. All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Heather. I'll see you soon enough.
Yes, definitely. See you soon.
Yeah. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.